With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
If you like our show, you're going to love the Jordan Harbinger Show on Podcast One. This week, Jordan joins former NBA Lakers superstar and Oscar Award winner Kobe Bryant for an unforgettable conversation that you don't want to miss. Check out the Jordan Harbinger Show every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. Hey guys, Yahoo has officially released their daily fantasy football contests. They have $1 million contest with no management fee and $100,000 to first place, meaning more money goes back to you, the players. It's a 10-entry max. You're not going to be playing against people with 150 lineups like on other sites. And Yahoo also has a $100,000 guaranteed contest. There are plenty of prizes out there. If you're just getting started with daily fantasy football, join the free-to-enter Yahoo Cup and play all season long. $150,000 in weekly and season-long prizes. And if you get a perfect lineup, you win $1 million. So get started right now today at yahoo.com/dailyfantasy. Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson, live on YouTube and, of course, on your podcast device. Not live.
Not live there.
Not. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. Can you do that? Can you do live?
I don't think so, no. That
would be a podcast. We should do that. We should change the game.
That would be a radio show, Steve.
Oh, so it's been done before.
Yes, for a while, in fact.
Welcome to PFF Radio.
Mm.
Yeah.
That would seem like a backward step.
This is podcast number 3. This week.
Yeah.
How are you feeling? This is back-to-back. This is like the second day, back-to-back days for like an NBA player. You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes you get a little break. It's tough. It's not easy. Back-to-back. How are you feeling?
It's like, it was like Renner with the basketball. Can't play the Y back-to-back days because of his knee.
I can relate.
Well, yeah, but you're old and, you know, night. You know,
I do have about 10 years.
You're large, old, and broken down.
Yeah, my joints are not handling right. Our noon basketball games.
He's young and should be fine, but apparently no.
Yeah, back-to-back's tough. Let's see how we do. How'd you prep for the podcast? Did you prepare? Did you do anything special to get fired up?
Like calisthenics, stretches, that kind of thing?
Like I listened to the Rocky IV soundtrack, you know, that we love. You know, got me all fired up.
No, I didn't do that.
No. Well, I might be bringing the energy.
Today is also the first day of the new audio setup.
New audio.
No
so
headset.
This is where we need to hear.
No headset at all. But we've got these cool, like, professional in-earpiece things.
Come on, don't show people.
Why?
It's a secret. It's like...
It looks professional.
Part of the show.
Yeah, but
it's like a magician showing his tricks.
No, like they're not like supposed to be invisible. You see the thing hanging off like Tim Tebow when he does
But we
little...
put them on our inside ear on purpose so that people don't see them. Like, that's part of the whole...
I still think it looks like we're TV professionals having one of these things hanging out of our ears.
Yeah, that's true. And then when you do... Yeah.
Right.
That's good. All right, I'm very professional here
today.
That's
what I'm saying. I mean, less professional now that you've just shouted at me for saying it.
Let us know what you think of the audio.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into it. Week 3 preview.
Okay.
We're in week 3 already?
Yeah.
I'm going to say that every week. We're in week 3. Thursday night football. for our podcast folk. You guys already saw the game, so I need to give a prediction.
Steve is going to predict what already happened from the past.
I don't remember what I predicted for whatever game the Titans played on Thursday night last year, okay. But I can almost guarantee it was Corey Davis related.
Huh.
Right? Did I predict a big game for Corey? I did.
I know for the Titans, I had Derrick Henry's big game, right? Wasn't that our Titans thing?
Oh, maybe you did.
Yeah.
Oh, so, all right, let's do some Corey Davis type stuff.
All right, yeah.
Corey Davis.
Oh, God.
Breakout. You saw it. Thursday night football. In front of everybody. Corey Davis had at least 8 catches.
Wait, did he beat up Jalen Ramsey now that Ramsey's on the trade block?
No, that's impossible.
Oh, okay.
That's impossible. All right. He sat in some zones, caught some digs in and out of around the linebackers. He didn't beat anybody.
He just racked up.
He probably
catches.
Got shut down by Ramsey those couple times that he got targeted, but everyone else.
Yeah?
Corey Davis.
Boye is dealing with, some hip problems. You think he took advantage of that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So Corey Davis owning the rest of the Jaguars defense to the tune of at least 8 catches.
All right.
And now he's over 10% of the way to the goal that I predicted, 1,000 receptions for Corey Davis.
Oh, like career?
Yeah.
That puts him over 10%
of the way? He's about 10% of the way there.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. After how long now?
We're in year 3.
It's going to need a steep acceleration in order to get to that. Either that or a Jerry Rice-esque.
Play Mariota.
Esque durability.
Well, yeah, that's what
it just goes for 20 years.
We're banking on that, too.
Okay.
Banking on a lot of things. I'm taking Tennessee. I took Tennessee to win prior to the game.
We both took Tennessee.
So, Corey Davis.
And they won, therefore.
Leading the Titans to victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's what happened.
Okay.
That's what we're saying happened.
That was quite unexpected.
That I went Corey Davis?
No. That happened.
Oh, that.
It was quite an unexpected turn of events.
It was such a fun game to watch.
Yeah.
Everybody makes fun of Thursday night, but not this week.
The rest of us were shocked. Obviously saw it coming.
I saw it all coming.
You're the big Corey Davis guy. But the rest of us were mind-boggled when that happened.
Mind-boggled.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I was shooting for there, but it wasn't that. But
all right,
that'll work.
Enough of the AFC South Thursday night matchup. Let's get to this weekend. Week 3 preview. The biggest game of the weekend has to be the Baltimore Ravens at the Kansas City Chiefs.
By the way, we should all just be very grateful that this isn't a color rush game.
Oh, it's not?
The Titans versus Jags. It's not, right?
I don't know.
It better not be, because I don't think I can deal with that.
I don't pay attention to whether or not they're doing color. Do they even do color rush anymore?
I don't think so. All I know is if this is color rush, we all have some major problems.
All I know is the Jags never should have lost their original uniforms.
Yeah.
They should have just kept those. They've crept back toward average, though.
Right.
Since last year.
Yeah. Way better. No,
once they got rid of gold, got better.
If this was that gold versus, solid blue thing, we would all have to just claw our eyes out.
Gold is not... All right. Don't even get me started. All right. Now, Baltimore Ravens at the Kansas City Chiefs. It's the biggest game of the weekend, Sam.
Yes. Yes, it is. This is fun. This is the Ravens against Patrick Mahomes and his witchcraft passing, which is just absurd.
Yeah.
Every week. It's insane. Like, he may not be play-by-play the best quarterback in the NFL every single week, but he does more insane things than any other quarterback, and it's not even close.
Yeah, his grade is down right now only because he's had 2 fumbles in the pocket that have been bad, completely on him through 2 games. That's, when you're on pace for 16 fumbles, that's not good.
Not ideal.
And he has missed a bunch of throws. There were some miscommunications and various things on Sunday that may have looked bad on TV, but the more you watch him, there were bad routes and stuff like that. But he's missed a few more throws than expected. But the high-end stuff is still there, leading the league in big-time throws, per usual, with 8. It is interesting, though, they did get shut down for 3 quarters against the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, against the Oakland Raiders.
The Oakland Raiders, yeah.
Yes. 3 quarters, they're shut down, but they're still able to score 28. It just really shows how explosive they are.
Right, 28.
Like, in their worst games, they still score 28, 30
points. Most teams shoot for 30 as a high watermark. They score 28 and a quarter.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. I tweeted a thing during the week of one of these crazy throws that he makes where it's like leaning to his right, working through traffic, going back across his body, across the field. Like the textbook throw that you don't ever try that. Never. Never try that. You will be benched for simply attempting that throw. Like, there's a scale, right? Most quarterbacks, if they even try that throw, would have somebody on the sideline shouting at them. Like, what are you even thinking? That is idiotic. If you do that again, you're never starting again in this league. At the other end of the scale, you've got a Brett Favre, right? Who kind of made a career out of trying those throws. And half the time it would work out well, and the other half of the time it would be a horrendous interception that cost his team the game. And you'd be like, that's Brett Favre's biggest weakness, is sometimes he just thinks too much of his arm and gets himself into trouble.
I think he just remembered the ones that worked.
Right.
Yeah.
But and the thing was, unlike every other quarterback who would get shouted at for even attempting it, the deal with Favre was you kind of had to let him do those because it would work every so often. And how do you tell him to stop doing it because of the ones that worked, right?
Yep.
And then now we've reset that end of the scale because you've got Mahomes where almost every single one of them is complete. Not even like not picked off. They're actually getting to where they're supposed to be.
He knows how to pick a spot.
They don't even look like poor attempts. They don't even look like ill-advised throws. He's just like lasering the ball in right to his receiver between coverage, across his body, across the... It's absurd. People are not supposed to be able to make those throws.
Spatial awareness.
But not just that, but the... Like, you know, you talk about arm talent and the ability to... The way he's throwing some of these passes, you should not physically be able to get the ball to where he's able to get it to. I would love to see... You know when they do the combine and Rich Eisen does his run and then they like simulcam him versus other people, like regular football players and real athletes, and it looks kind of silly? I would kind of love to see those throws Patrick Mahomes makes like simulcammed up against regular humans attempting them and see how far the ball got compared with where Mahomes was able to put it.
Maybe like, that's the next thing. Rich Eisen attempts Mahomes' throws.
Right, like he rifled this pass. It probably went 35 yards as the crow flies. If it was me throwing it, 20, maybe, 15, like it wouldn't get even in the same zip code to where he put it, let alone like at that kind of velocity.
So new combine events with Sam. So that matchup, Kansas City Chiefs offense against the Ravens defense. By the way, just an overall grade, it's teams number 1, 1, and 3 going at it.
And
let me just double check. I just clicked on it.
The Ravens D was the team that he hit that ridiculous no look against next year.
Yeah.
Last year, rather.
On fourth down.
Right.
To convert.
So it's not like even, you know.
Well, the Ravens gave him a really good game last year.
Against the best defense, he's not going to be able to do that because he still is.
So the other thing that the Ravens did, everybody talked about last year, hey, they ran the ball. They kept the ball away from the opposing offense. Like in that game, they did put together a whole bunch of drives to essentially keep Kansas City off the field. So they did play that game extremely well. Yes, Baltimore has our top overall grade. It's Baltimore, then the Patriots, then the Chiefs. So it's 1 versus 3 here. Going back to the preseason storyline about Baltimore and their defense, we thought it was just one of those, hey, look, they're going coverage heavy. They got one of the best secondaries and a questionable pass rush. And while the coverage grade hasn't been spectacular so far, even after playing the Dolphins too, Brandon Carr's playing well. Earl Thomas still capable of making plays back there. Jimmy Smith lasted 6 snaps so far through the first game. So that hurts a little bit of the depth. But Marlon Humphrey's back there. I mean, they've got Tony Jefferson. They've got the pieces back there, plus the creativity to make life really difficult on opposing offenses.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting for the Chiefs because they were held scoreless for 3 quarters. It's such a weird game where you can be held scoreless for 3 quarters, but score 28 in the other one. Everything looks rosy overall because you made a ton of big plays.
But it's also like there was a negated 70-plus yard touchdown.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, they executed everything except one guy held.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just there was a fine line between them scoring more points. But I love this matchup. Baltimore's defense, their coverage ability. As far as pass rush goes, Matthew Judon's been the top guy up front. They're getting a little bit from Tyus Bowser, Pernell McPhee, Tim Williams. That's what we expected. It's all of those guys grading between 68 and 75 in our system as pass rushers. All of those guys, 3 to 6 pressures each. And they're all just mixing it up, right? Piecing together a pass rush as we expected. And they've got one of the best secondaries in the NFL. So that matchup's fantastic.
The thing that makes it really interesting this year is that this is a different, well, it's a different Lamar Jackson and therefore a different Baltimore offense. So last year it was, if we can make life difficult for this Chiefs offense, keep them to a low scoring game, then we have a shot. Because basically, you know, there's no way they were going to match them on offense.
Now, do you think they can match them?
I don't know if they can match them, but Lamar Jackson looks to be capable of putting up points in a way he wasn't last year. If he continues hitting the throws he's hitting, making those big time throws when it counts, taking advantage of the easy schemed up stuff that's coming off the back of his rushing threat. Like this team, what did they score, 24 the last time they faced each other?
Yeah.
They can score 30 now against the Chiefs defense, again, particularly against the Chiefs defense. So now this team is much more capable of hanging with the Chiefs in some form of shootout game. Now, if it gets into the crazy numbers, you know, if Kansas City puts up 40, et cetera, which against the Ravens defense would seem unlikely, but if they push it to that kind of level, they're probably not going to live with them, right? But
yeah.
If it's a vaguely low-scoring game, or at least a low-scoring by Chiefs standards, they can actually hang with them in that kind of shootout.
I want to see where, you know, where does Lamar regress to? Because if you just look at the numbers, just the raw numbers, a completion percentage going from about 57% to 72%, it's only two games, but going up 15 percentage points,
yeah,
massive. To go from last year, he had a, you know, our fumble grade is one way of just saying, okay, when you do fumble, how, you know, how much is your fault or to blame? He had a 23.7 fumble grade last year, meaning he had a lot of bad fumbles, whether it was rushing the ball or sacks in the pocket. He hasn't had a turnover-worthy play yet this year. So no interceptions, no turnover-worthy plays that should have been picked, and also no bad fumbles. So how far, how much can he keep that up? Yards per attempt is up 3.5 yards per attempt, 10.5 this year versus 7 last year. Is it just a two-game anomaly, or is this truly a complete, you know, he developed. He just completely developed and got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the more fascinating questions. I mean, he is playing insanely well, but not to the point where you think this can't possibly continue, right? He's not doing anything otherworldly right now. He's taking advantage of the open throws, and he's hitting an occasional big-time throw. Now, it would seem like a massive departure from his typical baseline to stay at this, but it's not like he's reached a level where you're like, there's no way this could possibly continue. Like, he's not doing what Fitzpatrick did last year through two games, where, like, there is literally no way this continues for any length of time. It's just impossible. It's playing at a level that is completely unsustainable. Like, Lamar's playing really well, but it's not at a level that you think this is, there's no way he can sustain this at all. It is within, like, it's within the plausibility range that this is actually his ceiling, and he's just managed to hit it really quickly.
So we're talking Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, MVP candidates going head-to-head here in week three. One more thing I think we need to touch on. The Chiefs defense was terrible last year, played a decent game last week against the Oakland Raiders. They have not been a disaster yet. However, we mentioned it on the Monday podcast, Chris Jones had the majority of the pressures in that game against Oakland. So far for the season, he has 11 out of 25 total pressures for the Chiefs. 11 out of 25. And Frank Clark is sitting there with one solitary pressure on 68 pass rushes through two games.
The Frank Clark thing is crazy. He needs to play dramatically better than that. There's, even if you take the opinion that he is a kind of overrated player, he's way better than he's shown so far.
Oh, absolutely.
So he needs to step it up.
So that'll be part of the story. Kansas City's ability to put a little bit of pressure on Lamar Jackson, make things easier on the back end. We'll see if Marquise Brown can keep up his incredible explosiveness, the rookie wide receiver out of Oklahoma. Where'd you go as far as your pick goes, Sam?
KC.
I also went Kansas City.
We all did. That's going to get us a lot of hate.
Oh, yeah.
People hate when we go.
The Ravens are equipped to slow down the Chiefs. Should be the game of the week.
Unanimous. That's the word I was trying to dig out of my brain there.
Unanimous. We got it. Staying in the AFC, Houston Texans at the Los Angeles Chargers. I think this is a fantastic game. We've got playoff implications here. Two teams who certainly have their own issues. They've dealt with, you know, injury concerns or just holes. My question for the Texans, similar stuff to last year. By the way, the offensive line has not been as bad as people thought, as bad as we thought. They're ranked 17th in pass blocking grade.
They were kind of moving in that direction last year. Like, they'd gone from being utterly horrendous to being not terrible in pass protection. So that part's been actually moving in the right direction for a while.
But Watson's still taking too many hits.
Yes. Which is exactly, honestly, this is like replicating Seattle just a few years later, right? It's that line began as an absolute train wreck.
Yep.
It got steadily better. It was always going to look worse than it is because the quarterback is a part of that problem in terms of bringing pressure on himself. It's actually really amazing how closely those two are how much history is repeating itself just in a completely different venue.
We'll talk about Seattle, obviously, when we get there. But did you see who's got the fastest time to throw this year?
I want to say I did, but I can't remember who it is.
I just gave you the answer. It's Russell Wilson.
Is it Wilson?
Russell Wilson with the fastest time to throw. And time to throw for us, just the way we track it, from the snap to release. And that includes extending plays and scrambles and all that stuff. So for perspective for Houston Texans fans, Wilson was always one of the longest times in pocket, times to throw in the NFL, up at a high 2 seconds, into the 3 seconds at times. Now he's at 2.26. Deshaun Watson, in year three here, has always been at the higher end, up in that 3 second range. Right now he is 32nd out of 36, 2.95 seconds. So when you hold the ball that long, you are putting a little bit more pressure on the offensive line, or you're taking pressures that we're going to essentially assign to you. We assigned two sacks to Deshaun Watson out of the four, I think he was sacked on Sunday. So, by the way, Kirk Cousins has the highest to go with being, part of the reason why he's been pressured 60% of the time. We'll talk about it when we get there. But Deshaun Watson is a part of the pressure issue, so to speak. So, a lot of, we used to say this about Cam and other quarterbacks. When you have special ability to throw the ball down the field, which I think Watson does, how do you balance making those hero plays, which he's pulled out extremely well, balance those with, man, I got to take the easy stuff when it gets there. Russell Wilson, too. It's the same idea, right?
Right. It's fascinating. When you look at who's given up the sacks for the Texans, they've got a couple of offensive linemen that have given up one. Laremy Tunsil, who they just traded for to solve their offensive line problems, has given up two. And Deshaun Watson is the one that we've charged for the most with three.
Yeah.
So like, it's not the way you would expect that breakdown to be if you're a Texans fan thinking, oh, the line's terrible. All the guys that aren't Tunsil are garbage. They're the problem. I mean, not necessarily.
But overall, Watson, 85.2 grade. He's a top 10 quarterback for us right now, the way he's playing.
Continues to play really well.
So he's playing well. But here's what the point I was trying to get to with the Texans. Last year at this time, we were like, man, how are they winning all these games? The secondary is playing above and beyond expectation. This year, we had similar low expectations for the secondary, and they're not playing well.
Yeah.
And they already released out Aaron Colvin.
Yes.
But they do not have a great secondary. That could be the thing that absolutely holds them down and, gives the Chargers, some hope in this one, I think.
Yeah, now you're going up against a team that does have some, real weapons in the passing game, and some of those matchups do not look like they're going to go pretty for the Texans coverage unit that hasn't been the best in the world.
And pass blocking grade, where are the Chargers right now? Like, they're on the bottom. Where are they? They just lost it. Bottom half?
Like, can you imagine any of those Houston defensive backs trying to match Keenan Allen just generally in route running?
No.
It's going to go badly.
So even without Hunter Henry out there, the Chargers do have some weapons to throw to. The pass blocking grade is right there with the Texans. Similar. So mid-tier. So either those old lines are going to get worse as expected, or they're starting to play a little bit above expectation. What else are you looking for in this one?
I think that's a big part of it. I want to see how they match up on the back end with those Chargers receiving weapons. Can they actually slow them down? Are they just going to get completely mauled by Keenan Allen, his route running, what the rest of those Chargers receivers can do, or can they have any hope of slowing down that Chargers offense?
What about Texans defensive front? J.J. Watt. They had Charles Omenihue. He was our highest graded rookie last week in his debut for the Texans. He moves up and down the line of scrimmage. So there's a lot.
DJ Reader's been playing.
Reader's been playing well. Whitney Merciless still there. So I think the Chargers O-line, even though they've played a little bit better than expected, going to be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, they're still going to have their hands full.
The Chargers, by the way, you talk about all the pressures for Kansas City coming from Chris Jones. Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa have combined for 13 of the Chargers' 19 pressures. 13 out of 19. Yeah. That's about 68.2% off the top of my head, Sam.
You still shouldn't be able to do that.
Just a guess. So the interior guys, Justin Jones has two. Brandon Mebane has one. Our guy Jerry Tillery has zero.
Yeah, really hasn't. I mean, he's something of a story at this point in that he really has not hit the ground running yet.
Not at all.
Like, we were pretty high on him, expected him to have that kind of interior pressure that this team hasn't really had for a while, and so far definitely has not been bringing it.
All right, so where are you going with your pick in this one is what I'm trying to say.
I'm going with the Chargers.
I took Houston. You sure you yeah, you did.
I did.
Why did Bruce's picks are screwing up the spreadsheet?
Yeah.
Why did he type team names in?
Well, not just that.
Can you watch it? We got to teach you how to use the right abbreviations.
If you look, he didn't do anything consistently.
So he used any for New England and then typed out Raiders and nothing capitalized.
Right.
Typed in Chargers, all caps.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Can we get somebody to interpret things for him?
So he's done both abbreviation and team name, and in both instances has done both all lowercase and all uppercase.
It's ruining my spreadsheet.
It's actually quite an amazing journey through his picks, just
Bruce.
Scanning down how he typed those in.
Bruce, we're going to work on that. All right, the other big game.
You don't have to use a lot of Google documents in the NFL. He's new to this.
No, you don't. But you have to learn a foreign language in every place you go, and they just pick that up like it's nothing.
Right.
I mean, a lot of it's the same foreign language. But
sure.
Whatever.
I'm just saying, you're never going to know these things until you're exposed to them. And Bruce has only recently been exposed to Google documents, so it's a learning curve.
Growth mentality.
Right.
We're going to get better.
We need to take him to grad school.
That's his school.
Right.
That's what he does. All right. Next game, New Orleans Saints at the Seattle Seahawks, the other somewhat big game that we can dive into a little bit deeper. Saints, of course, going with Teddy Bridgewater. Drew Brees banged up.
Are you buying this crap that they're peddling about using two quarterbacks?
No, I'm saying they're going to go Teddy Bridgewater. Yeah, I mean, they're going
to. Right, but they're saying they're going to use two quarterbacks. They're saying there's no starter. We're going to use them both. That's just coach speak for I'm not telling you who to prepare for, right?
Yeah, but I think. So I was expecting some level of that, but I don't think it's going to be like Steve Spurrier back in the day legitimately switched quarterbacks every play
right.
at one point. I think it was Jesse Palmer and Doug Johnson.
Right.
It was like, hey, you go ahead. How mad would you be if it's like
Jesse Palmer was old enough to have been teammates with Doug Johnson?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was Danny Werfel.
I have those two like in my brain separated in eras for some reason.
Really?
I don't have them like concurrent.
I don't think I'm screwing this up.
I mean, probably not. I'm just.
So it was Danny Werfel. Awesome.
Right.
Star. He goes to the NFL. Doesn't do great. Mm. And then it was Doug Johnson and Jesse Palmer, and Spurrier couldn't sort those guys out for like 2 years. So there was a point where they were legit switching off plays.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think that's a great plan.
I don't expect that.
No.
To happen.
But, I mean, we've seen preseasons and stuff, or even like colleges where you get, you know, you get a drive, he gets a drive, you get a quarter, he gets a quarter.
I don't think it's going to look like that. I think it's going to be somewhat play to play, like, you know, here's a few plays for Teddy, and oh, we're mixing it up. Here's Taysom Hill.
For a little bit, for like a sequence?
Yeah, I expect some of that. You know, you get like a two or three play mix.
Right.
Teddy goes out and plays some wide receiver because you got to get that 4 yard wildcat play in. Yeah.
To me, it's just going to look like the regular Saints offense, right? Bridgewater is going to be Drew Brees, only without being Drew Brees. And then Taysom Hill is going to get the Taysom Hill package every now and again. I don't, this idea of we're going to use two quarter, like that's just what you tell them so that they don't prepare for one of them.
Yeah. As I always say, though, if the defense has to prepare, you also have to prepare for what you're going to actually do.
Right. But they've already been doing that, right? Like,
yeah, I guess.
The only thing you would be doing different, I mean, if you're starting Taysom Hill, you're already preparing as if he's a starter. And if you're not, he's been doing what he's been doing anyway, so you don't have to prepare any differently for that.
So here's the thing. Seattle, number 25 coverage grade. In the NFL. That was as expected, right? Their big question was going to be in the secondary. The Saints just played the Rams, who have the number 2 coverage grade in the NFL. Of course, we're 2 games in, so the Saints are part of the reason why the Rams have that. But if there was a game where Teddy Bridgewater could maybe get back, show some of the potential that we expected from him, even though it's in Seattle, this should be the game. You get a week that you're the guy, you're the starter, maybe. No?
Well, so, yes, because the opposition isn't great, right? Like, the talent-wise, you should be able to go after those defensive backs because they're not that good. The problem is, I think that scheme actually encourages the short underneath stuff.
Right? Yeah.
The problem with Teddy, as we said on Monday at the moment, is that he has become a bad version of Alex Smith. He's become a parody Alex Smith account. And what you get right now is Teddy just taking everything underneath, not going deep ever. And then anytime he's not doing it as efficiently as Alex Smith used to. So anytime he misses a throw, now he's behind the chains and he's not capable of digging himself out because he's not taking anything deep. So that this defense encourages that style of play. It's like it's designed from the ground up was we keep everything in front of us and we deal with 1,000 paper cuts and, you know, we don't allow the big plays to happen. So that's kind of why it was set up, and that's why teams like the Patriots are always really good against these cover three type defenses because they're perfectly happy to take the 1,000 paper cut approach. But it's basically it's playing into what Teddy's already doing at the moment, which is currently an issue, which is
you do have to fire one up the seam every now and again.
Right, and if he's not going to do that, it's not going to work. So this is they need to have spent all week basically saying, you're doing great, Teddy. Everything's going fine because I suspect, you know, I suspect this needs to be a confidence thing. You know, you can't just say, Teddy, you suck. Go deep. You've got to be like, Teddy, look, you're doing great. This underneath stuff, it's working well. You're finding the right guy. Accuracy's been a little bit spotty, but don't worry. It'll come back. It's a rust thing. You're going to shake it off. Next week, though, what I want you to think about is when there's a guy running up the seam.
Throw it to him.
Throw it to him. Throw deep. Hit him. Just, you know, take a couple of shots, Teddy. Loosen the old cannon up a bit. You know? Rediscover what it's like to go deep a bit. You'll find you like it. So I suspect the whole week is going to have been them trying to convince him of that, you know? Butter him up.
You're good with
get him thinking it's good. And then send him out there with the confidence to strike deep against this team. If that happens, Teddy's okay. If it doesn't, they're screwed and they need to go to Taysom Hill next week.
Good pep talk.
Thanks.
I think that sums it up. That's the Saints offense right there. So I got some numbers for you for the Seahawks offense. Right. So if I told you that Russell Wilson was pressured 23rd highest rate in the NFL, 23 out of what I say 36 qualifiers, 30.8%. What would you think?
Well, when you tie that to the fastest time to release in the NFL, it's not that great.
Well, I already told that to you before. Yeah. So he's got the fastest time to throw. The Seattle pass blocking grade is last.
Right.
So this is, again, the story that we're trying to tell here. The pass blocking grade or pressure rate is very much on the quarterback and the scheme and what you're doing. So the fact that Russell Wilson's getting the ball out of his hands has protected Seattle's O-line, which has played worse. So forget those improvements for a minute. They've played far worse than they did the last few years.
Which, by the way, is not in the least bit surprising when you look at the unit they've assembled. Like,
oh, it's a bunch of road grading maulers.
Right. You remember late 90s, early 2000s, they used to love nothing more than showing you the average weight of the offensive line.
Yeah, here's a bunch of dudes that are like 330.
Right.
Yeah.
Back when teams were like just trying to get as large as humanly possible.
Yep.
Like, here's the Minnesota Vikings offensive line. It's like averaging 345 with David Dixon and stuff. Like, this seems this offensive line is built for that graphic. What is the average weight of this line right now? Mike Iupati, DJ Fluker. Like, this must be right up there with the 330s. In terms of average weight, this line is built for the late 90s, early 2000s, and that's not what the NFL is right now. So consequently, they may be able to grind your face off in the run game.
Fetty, but Fluker.
As soon as you drop back to pass, there's going to be some problems.
DK Metcalf helps that too if you just line him up in line. He's up there. No, so Russell Wilson, 23rd highest rate of pressure, but when he's been pressured, he's been sacked 40% of the time. So he's still been sacked 8 times on 20.
That's a lot.
Pressure dropbacks. That is by far the highest in the league. By comparison, you've got Marcus Mariota is up at 33%. That's second highest. So I just found that really, really interesting that Russell Wilson in Seattle, and there was a point in his career, I think a couple years ago, they had, you know, they're getting rid of the ball a little bit quicker. But through two games, it's been a different style for Seattle. Now, much like Deshaun Watson, we're using this example, not critically of Russell Wilson, but he does, you know, he can do a better job of avoiding sacks, but throwing the football and everything, he's been great. Number five passing grade in the NFL, 86.9, or overall grade among quarterbacks so far. So he's throwing the ball well, completed a ridiculously high percentage of passes last week against Pittsburgh, completing 78% on the season. And I want to see a little DK Metcalf and Marshawn Lattimore matchup.
So Dwayne Brown is letting the side down. Dwayne Brown's only 315.
You were doing math over there trying to figure out?
Yeah, and that is dramatic. Well, no, I was looking up the numbers. I'm not nearly capable of doing that math on the fly in my brain. At 315, he's pulling the side down, though, because we've got DJ Fluker up over 340, Mikey Patty over 330. Who else was in there? Jermaine Fetti's up like 325. Ethan Pocic is down at like 320, so that's not great. But Dwayne Brown's a problem.
Justin Britt's a little tiny, too.
Right. If we could get Dwayne Brown out of there for some other gargantuan, immobile behemoth at left tackle, then we'd be cooking.
See if they could trade for Andre Smith. Get him over there.
I imagine they could.
Can we get Mount McKinney out of retirement? Let's get him in there.
Yes.
So anyway, I'm going to tweet those Russell Wilson stats out. I do find them interesting. Pressure rate being low, sack rate being really, really high still in the Seattle, pass blocking still being poor. So quick passing game against the Saints secondary. Probably want to avoid Marshawn Lattimore, even though I want to see Metcalf versus Lattimore. But that should be a good matchup there. Who did we pick in this one?
Seattle.
Both. I took Seattle. Were we unanimous? No, everybody took Seattle except Bruce took the Seahawks.
Yeah, or the E-Hawk if you look at just the cell size.
Took the E-Hawks.
Mm-hmm. No, not Hawks. E-Hawk.
Oh, the E-Hawk.
You took the E-Hawk.
Good job, Bruce. I hope he's watching. All right, let's go. Now we'll go rapid fire.
Are you not concerned that he's just going to come in here and kick your ass?
No.
No? Okay.
All right. He respects me.
Yeah?
I trained him in the PFF ways all offseason. I'm his mentor.
Yeah?
PFF mentor.
I'm just saying, your knees are kind of shot. I don't know if you can outrun him.
Oh, no, I definitely can't.
Right. So if he decides he's going to,
he's gritty, too.
Right. If he decides he's going to come in here and just beat up on you,
rough, man.
You're done.
I really can't stand up without, grunting noises and, propping myself up and everything right now.
You're like those old dogs, those old big dogs. Eventually, they reach a point where their legs just can't support them anymore. And you have to,
that should be happening to me at, 60 years old, not at 37. Is this just my falling apart?
Yeah.
Now?
The evidence is mounting.
This is not good.
Right.
Joints just can't handle basketball anymore. But I'm going to still do it because I'm losing weight. That's the thing. I'm losing weight, feeling pretty good.
You need to keep coming so that I can learn the rules.
Yeah. Because my game's coming along. I hit a legit hook shot yesterday. Not a jump hook, like Magic Johnson through the lane, full-on sky hook.
Right.
I don't think I've hit one of those in my life, but Kareem. I just kind of did it. Kareem style.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
It was amazing.
Magic. Alizolo.
George Zedek, UCLA fame. Yeah. Yeah, I got to teach you the rules, though.
This is what I'm saying. So I need you. Look,
you're coming along, though.
I've come from a game where contact is encouraged. That's all I'm saying.
So let's compare your basketball game to an NFL player.
Okay.
So who's like the most incompetent NFL player who at one point...
Nobody at my level has ever reached the NFL. Like, nobody that bad.
Just comparatively. You mustered a little bit of confidence and strung together some...
It would be
like
Willie Beavers or Hackenberg, right? Except it was an actual growth curve attached to it.
Oh, yeah, you're Hackenberg. There we go.
Off at Hackenberg, right?
No, you're still Hackenberg, but it's like Hackenberg, even he can complete a few passes here and there.
No, because there's been development. Hackenberg never developed anywhere. So I have to... You have to go somewhere from there.
If Hackenberg completed a couple passes, they could be misconstrued as development, but he's still Hackenberg.
No, because the implication there is that I haven't developed at all, and we've just hit like a lucky run of games. I think that would seem unfair. I think there's been market development. It's just it's still terrible.
All right.
It's just that the starting point was so Hackenbergian that, we had a long way to go up before we got to viable.
Yeah. You've played feisty defense. Hmm. You've hit a few shots here and there.
The occasional one, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Rapid fire. Through the rest of the games, week 3, Oakland Raiders at the Minnesota Vikings. What are you looking for here?
This is going to be the classic Kirk Cousins bounce back game, right? Because gone is the important game. Up comes the kind of pointless one that you're expected to win anyway. And going up against the defense, it isn't great.
Yeah, this is the one.
Right.
By the end of the week, Kirk Cousins will be back in the top 10 in passer rating in the NFL.
Right. So he's going to go for 330 yards. 4 touchdowns, no picks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
75% completion rate.
They're at home, yeah.
Right. He's going to put up a ridiculous statistical game, drop a few dimes in there. There'll be no terrible decision. Or if there is, it's sort of swept under the carpet because, somebody else recovers it. Say he'll, randomly fumble the ball for no particular reason, trying to do something ridiculous, but, Dalvin Cook will fall on it. So nobody will remember it by the end of the game.
Dalvin.
This is the classic Kirk Cousins bounce back game. These are the games he shows up for while spending all week talking about how disappointed he is in himself for not having shown up for the actual one that mattered.
That's what's that happening. Too.
Yeah, that's what's happening here.
You're right on, man. I can't wait to replay that after it happens. It's going to be great.
What do you want to see?
I want to see Dalvin.
Okay.
And I'm going to go back to what I tweeted earlier this week because a couple weeks ago I tweeted, hey, I think Dalvin's better. I said better than.
You did.
Zeke or Gurley. And like I said at the time, half my timeline thought I was nuts. And the other half is like, oh, yeah, you're right. Stay healthy. I said healthy Dalvin.
Yes.
Healthy
right.
Dalvin. So now we've got two whole weeks of evidence. And it's mounting.
Yeah.
So here's the evidence after 2 weeks. Yards after contact. Dalvin Cook, 185 yards after contact to lead the NFL. Todd Gurley and Zeke Elliott have combined for 204. So they only have 19 more yards after contact than Dalvin alone.
Combined.
Missed tackles forced. Dalvin has 8. Todd Gurley and Zeke have 8.
Combined or each?
Combined.
Okay.
Receiving yards. Dalvin has 46. Todd Gurley and Zeke have combined for 27. And then touchdowns, Dalvin has 3, and Todd Gurley and Zeke have combined for 3. So therefore, Dalvin Cook is better than Todd Gurley or Zeke because I have 2 weeks of evidence to prove it.
Well, 2 weeks of evidence, how can you argue with that?
How can you argue?
Here's what I find fascinating. The 2017 NFL draft was an interesting one for running backs. And you had Christian McCaffrey, who looks like a phenomenal pass-catching running back, has literally not come off the field yet this year. He's played 100% of the snaps.
Yeah.
The people that have played 100% of the snaps for Carolina are the 5 offensive linemen, Cam, who's about to miss this game with a wrecked foot, and Christian McCaffrey. Running backs are not supposed to play 100% of the snaps.
Not at all.
Crazy. And yet, he does. You've got Dalvin Cook, who's finally healthy and looking like an absolute star in that type of offense. And yet, the guy that went number 4 overall was Leonard Fournette, who looks awful and who looks not just awful, but completely irrelevant in a 2019 offense, right? This league has become more and more about getting these guys the ball in space and letting them take advantage of being a mismatch problem for the defender that's trying to tackle them. Leonard Fournette only functions running in a straight line where he can
get him behind that Seattle O-line,
where he can overpower a defender. And even then, he won't break the tackle. He'll just run into the guy and fall 3 yards over the top of him. It's amazing to me that knowing what we know about how NFL offenses currently function, that with that 3, they went Fournette, McCaffrey, Dalvin as an order.
I think we had Dalvin, McCaffrey, and Fournette was.
Yeah, I think.
After that. Kareem Hunt was in there.
I would have flipped McCaffrey and Dalvin, but either way, I think you would have those two way ahead of Fournette. He is not built for a 2019 NFL offense. Those two are both built spectacularly for it and for slightly different offenses. Like Dalvin, I think, has actually found himself in the perfect spot now, albeit the offensive line isn't actually that good. The system they're running and the blocking scheme really tailors to what he does well. Like, he's exceptional at finding those creases, running at pace, on those stretch plays. I'm actually rescuing what isn't tremendous blocking by being able to get thin, hit the right hole, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I love Dalvin.
Yeah, he's good.
We're all taking the Vikings, except Bruce is taking the lowercase Raiders. All right, let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions. I don't know about you, but injury reports are, to me, just not as easy to understand these days. I mean, okay. I understand them, but to, like, put context to them, the old probable, questionable, doubtful was a lot easier to manage. Now you got a lot of did not participate, limited participation. The point is, the Eagles have a lot of guys either not participating or participating only a little bit. They even canceled, would they cancel practice or something the other day?
Well, yeah, like they all got hurt against the Falcons.
Well, no, they all, of them. But they've been having to adjust their practices. So just from Wednesday, Corey Clement, Dallas Goedert, DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, Timmy Jernigan, and Jordan Mailata did not participate. And then limited participation was Derek Barnett, Fletcher Cox, Jonathan Cyprian, Rudy Ford, Nathan Gary, and that's all that really matters. Okay. So it's a lot of big names on there.
Yeah.
Banged up.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, I mean, we were raving about the Eagles and this roster that they built this offseason. if anybody has the depth to handle it, the depth on the D-line, maybe, I mean, they should have the depth at the receiving core, unless legitimately all of them are hurt.
Right.
That's an issue. But they should be able to handle it better than most teams.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, they're definitely hurting. There's a lot of quality players that are currently a significant doubt for this game. So that's got to have some kind of impact. But we are talking about what we believe to be the best roster in football heading into the league. Even taking some significant pieces out of that off or out of that roster should still leave them with a lot of things working in their favor. So, look, honestly, even with missing all of that, they should be a viable match for the Detroit Lions.
So Carson Wentz was a tale of two Carsons the other night, much like Stafford has been the tale of two Staffords when he's been playing. Stafford was, you know, incredible. Go-ahead touchdown, turnover-worthy plays are up through the roof, or have been up there. For him, Carson Wentz, same thing. He was horrible in the first half, and you saw his grade slowly get better
as the
game went on. So want to see a clean game from both quarterbacks. I think we're all still going Eagles, though. We're all going Philly.
Yeah.
Bruce is going Eagles. Lowercase Eagles for Bruce. What are you looking for in the New York Jets New England Patriots game?
I'm curious to see, so you're now going to be going up against Luke Falk. Do you dial back the amount of man coverage you run? Because...
No.
No?
No.
Because that ball's going to, like, every time he attempts a pass, it's either going to be like a quick slant.
You're tempted to just hit in zone?
Yes. I am tempted to sit in zone and say, when you attempt to throw this further than 6 yards, it's going to be in the air for about 7.5 minutes, and we're going to get under there and pick it off.
See, I would almost view it the other way. So, in general... To your point, zone coverage leads to more interceptions, turnovers. Man coverage leads to more pass breakups and just a lower completion percentage in general. So New England's been playing a ton of man coverage, and their completion percentage against has been among the league's best the last few years. I could see him just sticking with that and saying, good luck zipping the ball into the tight, because we play tight man coverage. You have to put the ball into a tight window, and we're just going to break it up. I mean, New England did a great job in that Steelers game. I mentioned it the first week. Passes were like getting to receivers' hands and they're breaking them up. They're doing a fantastic job of playing through the ball, breaking passes up. I think that's what we're going to see a lot of with the Jets offense.
Yeah.
All that said, Falk played pretty well.
He played okay.
All things considered.
Yeah.
After he got sacked a million times, he settled down.
Sure.
But there was a point where they had negative 22 passing yards.
Yeah.
Because sacks count as negative passing yards.
I'm having seen a reasonable amount of him in college. I'm not tremendously confident in his ability to have a big game against the New England Patriots. That's all I'm saying.
Where was Greg Williams the last time he faced Tom Brady? Poor research on my part. I should have thought about that. But not when he was in Cleveland. I can look this up in a minute. Was he with the Rams a couple of years ago when they would have played him?
But I
want to see that matchup.
I was interested in that game. I'm always fascinated by the idea of when, like, the emergency quarterback, right? Every time you get one injury and the starter goes down, the second guy comes in and he's looking like he's taking a beating, I'm like, who's the emergency guy? Because I always want to see the tight end that hasn't played since high school running an offense at the NFL level. Or for the Jets, it would have been Le'Veon Bell. Like, they would have literally run that direct snap wildcat offense all the time with Le'Veon Bell had Luke Falk got hurt. Am I the only one that kind of wants to see that?
I think probably.
Against the Patriots, there is a half-decent chance that Le'Veon Bell running whatever version of the Wildcat direct snap single-wing offense would function better than Luke Falk, a quarterback. That's all I'm saying, and I, for one, want to see that. In fact, I tell you what the perfect scenario is.
I don't want to see any of this.
Luke Falk plays for a half, right, gets hurt just before halftime. Nothing serious. We don't want to wish injury on people. Just enough to keep him out for the second half, right? You know, bad bruise. It's hampering. Can't hobble around. It's going to be fine by next week. But for this half, we're going to have to turn to Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell now spends the second half running the Wildcat single wing direct snap running back offense against the Patriots. I want to see which one worked better.
So that should have happened last year on Monday Night Football when the Bills trotted Derek Anderson out there. And they came out. Remember their first like four plays were like really creative and wildcatty and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then they were
just
like,
run that. Yeah. You don't even need the quarterback. Put him on the sideline, run that all game.
It's worth a shot. I mean, Duke came out against Alabama just running the triple option out of nowhere.
Seriously.
Like, hey, just do something crazy.
Right.
Play a crazy underdog strategy. The spread's over 20.
Yes. This is the thing, right? The reason those triple option offenses exist in the first place is because we're never going to be able to compete with those teams from a recruiting standpoint. We have crappy athletes compared to them. Therefore, we're going to run something weird that they don't understand how to defend properly and confuse the crap out of them. If you're the Jets, you are going to lose this game. There is literally zero chance in the world that Luke Falk outplays Tom Brady and the Patriots for an entire game. So why not show them something that they have no idea how to defend over any extended period of time?
Well, CBS Sports connected the dots here. Luke Falk, pick number 199 in the draft, just like Tom Brady.
People were saying that when he got drafted.
But he's also making his first start in week three against a legend.
Don't do it.
Just like Tom Brady did against Peyton Manning back in week three, 2001.
In week three of 2001, there may have been other a legend?
He was not. He was in his third year in the NFL.
Right.
Fourth year.
And the first couple had been like interception.
Yeah.
You know.
And the Patriots won by like 30.
Right.
So maybe that'll happen. So last time Tom Brady went up against a Greg Williams defense was 2016 in the Rams.
He was playing quite well that year.
He was playing really well that year. And Greg Williams held him, or the defense held him, to his second lowest yards per attempt. He was 33 for 46 for 269. That was only 5.8 yards per attempt. And, you know, one of his sixth lowest passing grade. But I'm interested in the whole Greg Williams has a safety playing in Boston while the rest of the team's in Foxborough.
Yeah.
And want to see how that short pass game looks against that.
It's kind of fascinating because he takes all manner of crap for that, right? But it's not without logic. Like it's there to prevent a specific thing happening, and it does that pretty well.
Like an 87-yard touchdown to Odell Beckham?
No. Well, it's there to prevent the 87-yard touchdown, but the one that travels 50 yards in the air, right? Not the one that exploits the hole underneath.
The one that travels 50 yards in the air, which happens?
Not very often, right? But it is there to prevent that deep pass. It's there to cheat range to the sideline for the single high free safety that isn't Earl Thomas, right? You don't need to do that with Earl Thomas because he has that kind of range. For everybody else, you kind of do. Otherwise, they're really not able to get to the sideline and influence those plays most of the time. So it's there to take away that specific type of play, which is a pretty dangerous play. Like if you have bad corners and you're susceptible to that play, you've got some pretty significant problems. So that's what it's there to take away. The problem is doing that opens up a pretty large hole directly underneath that. And that causes its own problems because now you're opening up an area of the field that teams typically have the most success targeting and B, feel the most danger from targeting because there's a lot of cluttered bodies in there. Now you're opening up that space, making it even easier for them to attack that. So it's like it's give and take, right? In order to take this away, I have to give you something else. And the thing I'm giving you looks pretty bad when it's continually exploited.
Yeah, it's either one of those games where he can keep New England's passing offense off balance enough to like kind of keep it close-ish.
Yeah.
Or he's going to go like all-out blitz and there's dudes wide open all over the place. Right. Or middle of the field's wide open and they get destroyed.
The Odell play looked even worse.
We're all taking New England.
Because...
Well, the safety was bad.
Well, the safety was terrible, but also they basically didn't put a third body over the formation.
Yeah.
So not only is there a hole in the middle of the field, there's an even bigger hole because you haven't stuck another body out there. The safety was the extra body, the one lined up in the next county. So, plus, he then ran to like the other side of the field when
that was bad.
I'm not entirely sure what that was about. But.
So we're all taking New England, except for Neil. He's taking Neil.
Neil's taking Neil?
Yeah, I think the Google Doc spelled his name as he typed in N-E. Because above him is his name, Neil.
This is not making it sound great as a company.
This is how we do our picks.
None of us seem able.
In a Google Doc.
None of us seem capable of
free advertising, Google. You're welcome.
Document.
Google Doc. Now rapid fire-ish. More.
Okay.
Do it more. Cincinnati Bengals at the Buffalo Bills. We're not rapid fire. I mean, we're just giving what we're looking for in each game. Okay. Bengals at Bills. Can the Bills go 3-0? They're 1 week away from a 3-0 versus 3-0 AFC matchup against the New England Patriots.
Battle of the Titans.
Is this a trap game for the Buffalo Bills? Are the Bengals a trap game for the Bills right now?
God. I'm curious to see if the Bengals can actually get after Josh Allen and the Bills, right? Because the Bengals are playing pretty terribly right now. Their offense kind of stinks. The back end of the defense kind of stinks. Basically, the only thing holding up its end of the bargain is Geno Atkins. Yeah, basically Geno Atkins on his own, right? There's a couple of people playing okay up front, but it's basically Geno, right? The only thing they're doing even vaguely well is rushing the passer. And the Bills' offensive line is still not the best in the world. It's actually been playing better than we thought it would. But that's like the only shot they have to do anything in this game is if they can really make a mess out of this Bills' offensive line and get after Josh Allen to the point where he can't function.
I just think Josh Allen's at that point in his career where you can't take a good game and say, like, oh, he's starting to figure it out. He is still so inconsistent. And our guy Kev tweeted the other day, Cole, Josh Allen's been inconsistent. And, man, Bills fans were italic. Where's the inconsistency? What are you talking about? He turned the ball over 4 times in week 1.
Bills fans are right up there with Bears fans in terms of you can't rationalize with them about their quarterback.
Yeah, so the thing about Allen is I think he's going to have games where he goes like 10 for 32 completing passes. He'll have other games where he looks pretty good and he finds a way to score touchdowns. But like week 1 was kind of like the epitome of it's really, really ugly, but he can make a couple throws and make some plays down the stretch and, you know, score a touchdown with his legs and all that stuff and grit his way through one.
The problem with those quarterbacks is, at least in terms of trying to rationally speak with their fans, is they make those big plays. And those, we talk ages, you know, we've talked constantly about this before. The reason for PFF exists is to combat the mental highlight reel that you have in your head. The way you actually consume games is there's 50 plays in this game. I can't put all 50 into my brain, so I'll remember the 5 most important. And with Josh Allen, that's likely to be, you know, 1 bad play, 3 good plays, 1 where something crazy happened. And ultimately, if they win the game at the end of that, you're like, well, done. He played well. Well, what happens if the other 40 plays he was, mildly bad? What happens if there were like a ton of easy misses in that and he made giant work out of what should have been a routine victory because he was, below average at best? Like, well, it doesn't matter. He made the big play he won. That's all I'm looking for here. Fine. But the point is that breakdown of play over the course of a game typically will predict that things do not go that way in future. So the problem with, pointing to these things and saying, well, he got the job done, is saying, well, that's not sustainable. If you play like this, if your profile looks like this every single game for the next 5 years, you will not win very many games because it doesn't. You actually need him to get better at the stuff that didn't cost him in this game, but probably will down the line. And that's the Josh Allen thing, right? It's, yes, he's capable of making these spectacular plays, but you're going to need him to get better at the routine stuff if he's going to consistently be the guy that leads you to victories.
On the impressive side for Josh Allen, adjusted completion percentage is up at 79%, much higher than we expected.
Now that
the sacrifice
is potentially unsustainable.
That might be tough to keep up. But, I mean, if it's a shorter passing game, and that's a big part of why it is, you're cutting back on the big-time throws. He's only got 2 big-time throws, has 3 turnover-worthy plays. So it's kind of the trade-off there. As always, the Bills coverage unit is what I like to take a look at. They're a top 10 unit for the 3rd straight year, number 7 right now. And I think that's what just keeps them in every game. And I think they're going to be 3-0 going up against 3-0 New England, a battle for first place in the AFC East coming in week 4. That's
we all do.
Prediction. We're all taking Buffalo.
Everyone pick Bills. Everyone pick Patriots.
We're all expecting that.
The New England Patriots.
Miami Dolphins at Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. I like
how much do the Cowboys kill them? The Dolphins can't be as bad as they've showed.
Can't they?
So they went up against a Ravens offense, which could be way better than we expected.
Since last week.
And they went up against the Patriots.
Where they were horrendous. They've traded away one of their best players.
Best run defenders.
One of their covering well. I mean, I'm not saying he was great. I'm saying he's one of their best players.
Yeah.
I'm saying since the team that got absolutely annihilated, they have traded away one of their better players.
Going up against the Cowboys team that is, like as we said, looking like a Super Bowl contender, rolling.
At what level of football do they have, like, the running clock when it's just, completely unbalanced?
I think they've done it in FBS games.
Right.
FBS versus FCS.
Mm. I think
in recent years.
How early in this game do they need to start the running clock for Miami just to get them out of there?
11 minutes left in the fourth.
11 minutes in the fourth?
Yeah, it'll be closer than you think. It's not going to be like 41-3 or anything like that.
Isn't it?
No.
Why not?
Just won't be.
This Miami team is terrible. It's going to Dallas.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
The Dallas Cowboys are really good.
Forgot that Miami getting crushed was at home twice.
Right.
At home.
They're going
September,
on the road against the seemingly invincible right now Dallas Cowboys, led by Kellen Moore. You heard me.
Wow.
You think this game is going to be in any way close?
I want to hear your Dak negotiations. Look, Dak, you're like the 18th best quarterback in the NFL. Kellen Moore's making you look like a star. Here's $20 million.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be a part of the negotiation, right? Where were you before Kellen turned up? Yeah.
Number 19 in PFF grades. Right. That's where you were.
You were okay. I can get okay. Okay is not okay. It's pretty easy to come by these days.
Kellen Moore will make anybody a star.
I might put him on the field. How do you like that, Dak?
Well, we already discussed that.
That's what I'm saying.
He could do all of it.
Right. I got 12 years out of Kellen. I can get 2 for 1. I can save money.
By the way, Dallas released Taco Charlton.
Yeah.
This week.
To make room for Robert Quinn.
Yeah.
Getting reactivated after his suspension, right?
Yep. So Dallas' defense has been pretty good so far.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way this isn't anything other than a giant beatdown.
Beatdown. All right. So it's
not going to be close.
It's a beatdown. We're all taking the Cowboys. And we'll do some more work on Dak next week if he has another good game.
Yeah.
A little more detailed breakdown. I might write something up on the website on how they're doing it.
The other thing about this is, it's to an extent, it's kind of irrelevant whether it's Dak or Kellen Moore. Like, if he's able to do that within Kellen Moore's offense, then that's good.
That's my whole concept of, like, a mid-tier quarterback, is if you do the other stuff well around them, you can get top 10 production out of him. And if you get that, you're happy.
Yeah.
If you get your top 10 production, if you know you've got the stuff around him to do that, then you're happy.
You would have to be
It's easier to get top 10 production out of other guys.
Yeah. The problem is, you would have to be very sure that you can elevate anybody to the same level to say, you know what? Okay, Dak, even though you just had this great season, we're going to go in another direction because you're asking for too much money. Like, you would be pretty sure that you can elevate somebody, but how high can you elevate them? Like, they may be the same kind of level quarterback, but maybe Dak is particularly good at maximizing all the things that Kellen Moore
does to
that offense. If he ends up, if he finishes the season, you know, playing at that kind of top five level, it's difficult to turn that down just because you know a huge part of it was the offensive coordinator, because you don't know how much that will boost the next guy. Maybe it'll only boost the next guy like top 15 or top 12 or top 10. Because you're leaving a lot on the table, not knowing how much you can get out of the next guy. So either way, they may end up just backed into a corner and needing to pay Dak a ton of money.
They're going to. I think it's set in stone now. He's getting all the money.
I didn't get the money.
He's getting all of the money. We're all taking Dallas, obviously.
Yeah.
Denver Broncos at the Green Bay Packers. Sam, what are you looking for?
Chris Harris versus Devontae Adams.
Nice matchup.
Chris Harris is no longer a slot corner. Like, people used to, ironically, because people used to basically rag on the guy for only being a slot corner. It's like, oh, he can't be one of the best in the game. He's a slot corner.
Oh, yeah. So much easier.
And at the time, he played both, right? He would play outside, and then when they went to sub-packages, he would kick inside, and he would be the slot guy. Now, he's not even playing the slot because they brought in somebody to play that role. So Chris Harris is a 100% outside corner right now. And now he's going to be going up against Devontae Adams, who's, you know, an exceptional receiver. That's a fun one-on-one matchup.
Great matchup there. The thing I want to see up front, Denver's pass rush has been horrendous. Third worst pass rushing grade in the NFL. Remember how we said Chris Jones has 11 pressures?
Yeah.
Denver has 10.
Ooh.
10. And
how many's Von Miller got?
Two.
Von
Miller has 2 and Bradley Chubb has 3.
Ew.
Right? That's crazy right now. So they need to figure it out. Now, you've got Aaron Rodgers back there. He'll hold the ball. You should be able to get to him. It'll be one of those games where they get 4 sacks and like 6 pressures. You know? So the rush might not be great, but they should be able to sneak a couple sacks if Aaron Rodgers continues to turn down open or easier throws and hold the ball a little bit too long. So that's what I want to see.
Okay.
In that matchup. Who are you taking in this one?
Green Bay.
Also taking Green Bay. So Green Bay's offense going against the Flacco pass. I mean, Green Bay defense against the Flacco. I think the story coming out of this is going to be like Green Bay's 3-0. They've allowed like 20 points this year. That's a big story.
It might be legit. Yeah.
It's a big story. Or it will be. Atlanta Falcons at the Indianapolis Colts.
I am kind of curious to see how this banged up Atlanta offensive line goes up against a reborn, resurgent Indianapolis Colts pass rush, which has actually been really quite impressive so far this season. You've got Justin Houston there. who is far from done, apparently. He's kind of back to his best. He's been rushing the passer really well. He's only got one sack, but he's got two hits, seven more total pressures. So he has the same amount of pressure as Denver, just Justin Houston.
Yeah.
You've got Kamoko Turay, who was the preseason star and hasn't played that much, but he's been getting a ton of pressure, and he has been on the field. Yeah. So he looks really good. They're actually able to get after the passer a reasonable amount, and this Falcons offensive line, A, got abused when they played a good defense and a pass rush in the Vikings, and then B, when they went up against the Eagles, just got, like, beat up.
Yeah, they've definitely been banged up. And we've got we have breaking news.
Yeah. You see, this is why you need the earpiece.
We have breaking news here on the PFF NFL podcast. Only on YouTube. It's only breaking on YouTube.
If you're listening on Friday, you know about this.
This is old news if you're listening on the podcast.
Yeah.
Breaking news now on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
Per rap sheet, Ian Rappaport has announced or has reported Josh Rosen will be starting.
Yeah.
For the Miami Dolphins. Quick, change your pick.
Okay, I'm still going Dallas.
Okay, so we already talked about the Miami Dolphins at the Dallas Cowboys. Give me 1 minute on Josh Rosen.
How long do you think he lasts as a starter this season before they go back to Fitz? Because
they're not going to go back to Fitz.
You don't think?
No.
You don't think even if he goes like...
If it's injury.
If they score single-digit points for the next 7 weeks, you think they're still going to roll with Rosen for the remainder?
Yeah.
I think they'll flip-flop back quarterbacks the rest of this year.
I think it'll be Rosen. The offensive line certainly not going to do him any favors.
I'm not even saying it'll be his fault. I'm just saying you can't sit there and basically accept not being able to score every single week.
He was not necessarily good in relief last week in the fourth quarter against the Patriots, but he threw two dimes down the field that were both dropped.
Right. He's looked okay when he's
coming. He can make some pretty nice throws.
He is in a terrible situation. And is every single time he's come in, whether it's preseason or regular season so far, he's shown at least one or two throws to make you go, okay.
Like what he has in him. And then I think the story of his career is going to be like, man, where's your consistency, Josh?
Right. But
why you take a 13-yard sack?
But he's in this situation where you've got no shot of winning. No shot. You've got no shot of succeeding, let alone winning.
Of course, but let's see what he can do. Let's see what he can do in this terrible situation.
It's definitely the right move because somebody has to see what they have in him. Honestly, there are teams out there with the amount of quarterbacks dropping like flies. There are some teams out there that should be seeing, given Miami's fire sale at the moment, what it would take to bring over Rosen. Like, what would they take for him? They traded a third to get him, right?
Second.
You think they would? I think they would take the third back.
Second.
I think they might even take a fourth.
No.
Yeah.
They haven't really figured out what they have in him. The whole point was to give
care.
Up a second.
They're going for a quarterback. This team is, the sales are amazing, Steve. Price is this low. You can't help but buy yourself a bargain.
They're not going to spend a second to just flip it for a third. Josh Rosen hasn't even played yet.
Browse the roster. Make me an offer, Steve.
Yeah, and everything's if it's a good offer.
Everything's open for debate. No offer is too low.
Oh, gosh.
I'm telling you. You could call up Miami and say, I will give you a fourth-round pick for Josh Rosen. I think they'd think about it.
No. Wrong. Back to the Falcons and Colts. I'm looking for Matt Ryan, turnover machine so far, leading the league in both real interceptions and turnover-worthy plays so far. He's got five picks officially, and which is crazy, right? In two games.
That's a lot of
Matt
picks.
Ryan, he had seven last year.
Yeah.
And six turnover-worthy plays. So a lot of them have been – they've been the real man. He's been just forcing them into coverage.
Okay. That the Falcons-Eagles game was nuts with both those quarterbacks just ranking random terrible throws.
That was like what football looked like in the 80s. Like,
right.
Here's a game where we combined for five picks and
nobody
bats an eye.
Right, this is why everyone wasn't passing 70% of the time back in the 80s, because all the quarterbacks were idiots. And every now and again, you'd throw some absurd pass.
That's why. So I'm taking the Falcons. You're taking Indy.
Yes.
Bruce is taking the Colts. There's a whole bunch of mixed opinions on this game. Per PFF.
Yes.
Carolina Panthers at the Arizona Cardinals. You know what's most fascinating about this? I know how closely you follow recruiting in college football.
Uh-huh.
We have a battle of two former Texas A&M five-star quarterbacks. Kyle Allen.
How did Texas A&M seem to get like every quarterback ever? Well, they everybody seems to have started at Texas A&M.
Well, they managed to make both of these guys transfer.
Right, that's what I mean.
So Kyle Allen transferred to Houston. Kyler Murray,
somewhere
of course,
along the way, everyone appears to have started at Texas A&M. How is that?
That's what they did. I don't know. Kevin Sumlin can recruit.
And how can't they keep them?
Well, because maybe he lies to them.
Oh.
Or maybe they're not actually that good when they're there. Well, Kyler was.
Fair enough.
He forced him out.
All right.
So Kyle Allen, starting for the Carolina Panthers, was okay last year in a Week 17 game.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who, like, his NFL stuff has been pretty good, but the college stuff previous to that does not give you a whole bunch of confidence in him.
We need to lock Neil's pick in on Stone here live in the podcast, because he'll try and change this once he realizes that Kyle Allen is starting.
He's got Carolina?
He does. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure that he knows yet that Kyle Allen not...
That is
not,
officially official, not right?
I don't think it's official. It's one of those things that I think everyone just knows.
I did Carolina radio today, and we're like, all right, let's talk about Kyle Allen.
Right.
What's going to happen?
But I think it's like, why, again, if you're the Panthers, you're not going to tell everyone, right?
I guess.
So I think it's like happening. Everyone knows it, but they're not making it official just in case.
Just so we can have a Cam Newton nugget on here. He's got the highest percentage of uncatchable passes in the NFL right now. 34%.
Pretty badly.
So he has not played well when he's been banged up. We're expecting Kyle Allen to start against Kyler Murray, the Texas A&M five-star reunion. What else are you looking for in this game?
The grades in overall quarterback play is pretty spectacular. Kirk Cousins, if you basically factor in all of the people that have played this year, Kirk Cousins is the worst quarterback we've seen.
Yep.
Let's say you limit it to a reasonable number of plays. Obviously, it's still Kirk Cousins. Teddy is next, based off that game. Ben Roethlisberger, who was terrible before he got hurt. Fitzpatrick is down there because obviously he's bad, benched. Cam Newton is next, 31. Cam Newton with an actual lower grade than Josh Rosen. Cam Newton has been pretty awful so far this season. And you kind of have to wonder, when your main quarterback is playing that badly, how much worse can Kyle Allen be?
It's a fair point. It's weird because I think Carolina, again, last year at this time we were saying, when they were 6-2, we said, look, they're not as good as a 6-2 team. And then they regressed along with Cam's injury. This year, I don't think they're as bad as an 0-2 team. I think their defense has done a lot of nice things. Still have Kuechly and Shaq Thompson in the middle, and Bradbury's playing okay at corner. So, like, I think their defensive front is the best that they've trotted out there in a few years. There's still, like, a lot of things to like about Carolina. Their O-line has been a disaster, though. Darrell Williams moving from right tackle to left tackle has not worked well at all.
No, it hasn't. He's been awful. Interestingly, he's basically only been good that one year. Like, he hasn't actually played that much. If you look at his career, he played like 650 snaps the year before his good year and wasn't particularly good. Year was insane because we'd heard from the Panthers that they really liked this guy.
And he had never graded well.
Right. And he'd never had this particularly good grade. I think he'd shown flashes. We'd seen bits and pieces. It's like, yeah, it's projecting a lot to say he's going to be good. Then he has this like Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber season at right tackle back in 2017. Plays the full season, doesn't miss a snap. Looks, pretty spectacular that year. Was good at run blocking, good in pass blocking. Then gets hurt. Doesn't play basically all of the next year. Then they flip him back to left tackle, and he's been awful.
But that's where, when you bring him back, like 1 year, $6 million? It's like, all right, keep him at right
tackle. Yeah, yeah.
Taylor Moton on the other, has played both sides,
and
fairly
he
well.
Good.
Yes.
That's the interesting thing about it, is he'd actually played well. I don't know why you flipped that at all.
I wouldn't have flipped him.
But I don't even know if you know what Darrell Williams is right now. Like, he's had one really quality Pro Bowl type season. He's been hurt almost the entire other time, and then the only other season you have on him, he played okay.
Disaster at left
or
tackle
not good. So yeah, that's not a, that doesn't appear to be great decision making.
Anything else in this one?
Is Christian McCaffrey going to come off the field ever?
No.
No?
He will not.
Another 100% of snaps?
We're all taking Arizona except for Neil and Bruce.
Yeah. And I guarantee he's going to try and change his pick.
New York Giants at the Tampa Bay Bucks. Daniel Jones.
The Daniel Joneses.
Not making his debut, but making his first NFL start.
Starting debut. Yeah. That's obviously something to watch.
Going up against the Todd Bowles defense. They're going to play some man. They're going to zero blitz him. Might take some hits. The defense has played pretty well through a couple, through 2 weeks. This should be a good one.
I'm kind of curious. We said before, I don't know that he's going to be better than Eli, but there, A, isn't that much room to be that much worse. Like, Eli's not been good. And B, we said all along, unless you think playing him is going to hamper him, now's the time to play him because we need to see what he is. This is about the Giants' future, and that's what we're going to get a look at. He played really well in preseason compared to what we thought he would do. Everything that his supporters said about him as a draft prospect in terms of the competition, yada, yada, is all true. So we're going to see some changes in the NFL. But, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what he can do against a scheme that will be aggressive and will come after him and will try and put him under a lot of pressure.
Saquon Barkley averaging 7.8 yards per attempt through 2 weeks.
That's pretty good.
It's not helping much.
No. I mean, if only there was a way of predicting that. What the hell has happened to O.J. Howard?
He's in a Bruce Arians offense that doesn't feature the tight end.
It doesn't have to feature him. Like, it wasn't featuring him last year. He still played really well.
He's playing poorly.
Badly. Yeah. Really badly. And across the board. He's not doing well at anything right now.
No.
We had him, like, primed for a potential breakout candidate role, given what we'd seen from him last year. And particularly because one of the things that was impressive about him last year is that his average depth of target was insane. It was really high. Like, they sent him deep a lot.
Right.
Compared to the other tight ends.
Lined him up out wide and made plays. And yeah,
right. So he was kind of like a match for this Bruce Arians system, albeit one that doesn't feature the tight end. Like, he was a tight end that could flourish within this system, and yet he's playing terribly. Like, what is happening?
Well, it's interesting because he didn't have a great rookie season, run blocking or, fumbled five times.
Yeah.
Last year it was fantastic across the board. Became more of the run blocker that we expected. Of course, you mentioned the big play threat, and he's back to not being good again.
Yeah.
So I think it's all just working off small sample sizes, and he's somewhere in between.
I mean, he'd want to get back to the somewhere in between fairly soon.
Well, yeah. He's got to end up getting there at some point. Who are we going with here? Tampa Bay hosting the Giants. The Giants, they have the worst coverage unit in the NFL right now. The Giants.
Really
worst
bad.
Coverage. So this is MVP Jameis Winston game.
Oh, yeah?
Right? Maybe it's a week off. Maybe you're a week off. They're going up against the Giants at home.
Hmm.
Or
yeah, I mean, the Giants defense.
Or Winston throws four picks and makes the Giants D look good.
Yeah.
Never know.
The Giants D will make most people look pretty good. Did you see, I saw to do a video at some point, I was watching like Lyle Collins blocks and his sort of highlight reel going up against that Giants D was just oh God.
Oh, it was great.
Like Alec Ogletree against Lyle Collins was just an embarrassment.
Yeah. He was awesome. Giants were not. We're all taking the Bucks.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh Steelers at the San Francisco 49ers. Mason Rudolph making his first NFL start.
Yes.
And the 49ers with their first home game.
Yeah. So this is interesting because the 49ers probably aren't as good as a 3-0 team, which they could well get to. The Steelers are interesting because everything we said about why the offense will be okay even without Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell is still true. The offensive line is really good and it's intact. It's, it's one of the more consistent units in the NFL. They still have a running game, even if James Conner is banged up. They've got players there that will generate success on the ground, and they've got weapons in the passing game, even if they don't necessarily make the best use of them. Juju Smith-Schuster is really good. They've got tight ends. They've got running backs out of the backfield. They have young wide receivers that have shown glimpses of being really good, and then they have Dante Moncrief, who should never see the field again. But that is a reasonable situation to put a young quarterback into, especially one that is up this game, is playing at the level that won him the backup job and made them seem pretty confident about him. And then the other thing, as we mentioned, when I read out that list of terribly grading quarterbacks, Ben Roethlisberger was down at the bottom. Like, Ben Roethlisberger has kind of been playing like crap. And there is, again, is not much room below that for Rudolph to be any worse.
Yeah, he did a nice job in relief last week.
So the Steelers are not a bad team, even though they haven't won.
So they still have a decent O-line, the weapons you mentioned, having Minka Fitzpatrick in the secondary. We'll see what happens. We'll see if that can improve things. Their pass rush is number two in the NFL. Like, they've got pieces that are playing
really well.
Yeah. I'm the only one taking the Steelers here.
Apparently, yeah. Though now that I've just like talked it out, I don't hate their ability to win this game.
I think they could do it. So Rudolph coming out, our quick scouting report on him, really tough because sometimes he looked great. Other times it's like, man, why is he throwing this duck? Like, yeah. Why is this big guy does not have a cannon for an arm? He'd make an NFL throw. He'd make a bad throw. His accuracy was inconsistent. But he just made a ton of plays down the field. And I thought his outside the numbers timing and accuracy was just fantastic. Like, he threw deep comeback, like the routes that don't matter. He threw really well. Deep comebacks, deep outs, like Peyton Manning style timing on the outside there. Can they tap into that skill set in Pittsburgh?
You have to think as well that the connection between him and James Washington has to actually result in something positive.
I would think so.
Right? They were one of the best connections in all of college football when they were both playing together at Oklahoma State. They had the timing. They had the understanding. Rudolph would put the ball up and let James Washington go to work a lot of times. He had that kind of nice arced throw deep down the field into that sort of sideline bucket that combats the fact that the deep middle safety can't get there, as we talked about before.
Yep.
Now, if anything has been true this season, it's that James Washington has been criminally under-targeted by the Steelers, right? The targets have either gone to Moncrief or they just haven't gone Washington's way. They've been force-feeding them to other people. They have to start using him more because at the moment, he's the guy that's been getting open deep. And those are the plays they need because they're probably not going to be as efficient as they would have been on a down-to-down basis now that Mason Rudolph is the quarterback. So let's try and make that up with some big chunk plays. And the guy looking likely to make those is James Washington. So let's throw him a few of these passes, rely on the fact that those two spent, 3 years doing this together, and let's assume they have some timing and chemistry together.
You get to see what Mason Rudolph has, what James Washington has, Deontay Johnson, Juju in year three. I mean, it might be an exciting time for Steelers fans to take a look at the youth movement and see what the future might be there.
And if it's not, don't worry. You don't have a first-round pick anymore.
Traded it from Minka. We talked about that in the last podcast. And then San Francisco trying to go 3-0. I think it's tough for their defense to maintain what they've been doing, but they're off to a pretty good start.
Yeah.
So everybody's taking the Niners except for me. It's too late for you to change your pick. I don't feel great about it, but, you know.
No, I can live with it.
All right, two more games to get through. We've got Sunday night football, Los Angeles Rams at the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland, everyone's darling this offseason.
Yeah.
Get destroyed by Tennessee in week one, mm-hmm. and then pretty much dominate a game against Trevor Siemian and Luke Falk on Monday Night Football with a million sacks and never really threatened in that game. Do we know anything about the Browns at this point?
I honestly don't think we do. It's kind of bizarre. And it's weird because, like, Baker Mayfield has been so much worse than certainly I thought he would be this season in pretty much every area. And yet he's not bad. I think he's been playing okay.
He's still actually grading better than the numbers would indicate.
Right.
We've got, like, the interception the other day is a pass that's normally deflected down into the ground rather than up to a defender. So there's – but at the same time – I mean, you were sending me a message like, hey, what's wrong with him?
Right.
Like, he was just missing some easy throws and hanging some up there.
It was like a wide open throw across the middle of the field at Baker airmail by like 2.5 yards. And it's like the dude is supposed to be laser-like accurate and is most of the time. How is he missing that throw? That's a throw that a quarterback like that should literally never miss. Drew Brees would never miss that throw, ever.
You know what he's playing a little bit like? He's like a little Roethlisberger-y. You know, like holding the ball longer than expected.
Yeah, where it just looks
slightly. Bailing himself out with big time throws.
Where it just looks slightly panicked the whole time.
Yeah, it's just not. And so is the offensive line getting into his head? Plus,
right.
When we're grading games, we take very seriously the quarterback's role in pressure, right? Not just do they hold the ball too long, where are they dropping back to? Are they maintaining pocket integrity so that the left tackle doesn't look bad and all that stuff? He was dropping back extremely deep in the pocket. That's not the best quarterbacks. Usually they're like, hey, if my drop back's 7 steps, I'm at 9, 9.5 yards, and that's it. I can't go any further because it screws up my offensive line. Baker looks uncomfortable. Is he thinking, man, I got Greg Robinson blocking for
me? I don't know. And that's a concern about this concept of, you know, quarterbacks are the most important thing when it comes to pressure rate, and you don't need a great offensive line. You know, it just needs to be able to hold up its end of the bargain and be okay. But if the quarterback starts to lose his trust in the offensive line, he's going to become the problem. And, you know, if you look at that and you're like, well, the quarterback is the issue here, but the quarterback is the issue here because he no longer thinks the offensive line can block for him. So this thing that the Browns did in the offseason, which was the only issue anybody had with the moves they were making, is, okay, we've sent away one of the best pass-blocking guards in the NFL. We've essentially not done a whole lot to address the offensive line, and we've made it worse by sending away the best pass blocker on it. Now, the concern with that is, in theory, that's fine if the quarterback is as good as we thought Baker Mayfield is. But does that get in his head? Do you now erode his confidence in the offensive line to the point where he starts to play differently and read worse because of that? That's a real concern, because
they should just show them the grades and say it's not as bad as you think, because they've been maybe top 12 or 13 unit.
But we've
overall
definitely seen offensive lines break quarterbacks in the past. And I don't mean physically, I mean mentally. Like, you break this guy to the point where he no longer believes you're going to hold up for any length of time whatsoever. You remember there was like a couple of seasons where Mark Bulger was like an all-pro?
Yeah.
The dude looked phenomenal, and then he just got absolutely wrecked by that offensive line, to the point where by the end of his career, he had perfected the throw and cower move, like the thing Eli's pretty good at these days.
Blaine Gabbert perfected that early in his career.
But Mark Bulger was absolutely destroyed from being a legitimate star quarterback for a while. Kurt Warner was broken physically and mentally, I think, by the same offensive line. You can wreck a quarterback if the line is bad enough. Now, I don't think Cleveland's line is bad enough for that to happen, but Baker's a young quarterback, so the standards might be different, right? What gets in his head might be less severe than what gets in Tom Brady's head or whatever.
Either way, the O-line hasn't been nearly as bad as maybe people think or it seems. And I didn't think I'd say it, but Baker's got to do some of the little things a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, hit the easier throws, pocket integrity, all that fun stuff. On the other side, the Rams, we mentioned the number two coverage unit in the NFL right now. That's after playing Cam, who's missing throws and stuff, right? So it's after playing Cam, and then last week playing Teddy Bridgewater in relief. So, you know, that's a factor as well. But there, especially when Aqib Talib's out there, we mentioned all last year, that's a tough defense to go against with Wade Phillips.
Yeah, and then I think the other thing that's interesting is Cleveland's defensive line able to get after the Rams, because their offensive line has been not good.
They've been bad.
They've taken a big step backwards, and that's a potential major problem for them.
They're, by the way, last in pass blocking efficiency, third lowest pass blocking grade. It goes Seattle, Minnesota, and then the Rams.
Yeah.
That was unexpected.
Right. They've been really bad. So the Browns' defensive line is definitely good enough to get after them and really make a mess of that. By the way, why was Myles Garrett so mad against the Jets?
I don't know.
He was taking, like, a lot of, you know, iffy shots. He seemed like such a nice guy when we were talking to him.
He was a nice guy. Especially when everybody else was fighting, and he's like,
right,
got no time for that.
Then he went out there and smushed Trevor Siemian, like, wrecked his ankle on what was a fairly, you know, borderline hit.
Imagine people thought he was too soft because he plays an instrument.
Right. It was a couple of those that were like, why? I mean, what's he doing? Those are... If they came from another player, Ndamukong Suh, say, the word dirty would be plastered all over Twitter that
day.
Well,
I think one of the best points you've ever made is the Quentin Nelson teabagging point.
Remind me?
Well, if anybody else, like, because it's an old lineman doing it, it's like endearing. Look at the way he buries this dude in the dirt and then does some questionable after-the-play type stuff. But when a D lineman does something, it's dirty.
Yeah.
As I keep thinking, like, Quentin Nelson's like the most loved offensive lineman in the NFL.
Right.
Because he buries people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he'd done the same thing to Trevor Siemian, if Quentin Nelson had done it to a linebacker, the guy would be being hailed as a hero.
Yeah, it's like, oh, good job.
He wrecked that guy so hard he injured him.
How gritty. Stole his soul.
Right.
Nice job.
Whereas Garrett, it's like, did you really have to jump on Trevor Siemian like that after he, you know?
Yeah, so why don't you start showing some consistency?
Look kind of mean. I haven't said either way.
You're questioning Myles Garrett.
I also question the teabagging.
Oh, good job. All right. Where are we going with this thing? Rams?
Yeah.
I'm taking LAR. Bruce taking the Rams in all caps. He's yelling his picks. The next pick he did not yell.
Oh, it's only because he didn't pull that one in.
He put Chicago. Oh, somebody typed in Chicago. Lowercase.
He forgot to hit enter on that cell, so we had to fill it in again for him.
He wanted to take Washington because I asked him in person.
And he changed his mind.
So we're all taking the Bears over the Redskins on Monday Night Football.
Except Austin.
Except for Austin, huh?
Yeah. Austin's gone with the Redskins.
Case Keenum, I didn't really, because I've been grading a lot of the throws and all that stuff, and I've watched a lot of Case Keenum. And there are definitely points in the season where I only know the grade or I only know what I saw. And then I looked up the other day and his stats are ridiculous.
You know what's really interesting, though? So that's the fun thing. Case Keenum is definitely due for some kind of like come back down to earth, because right now his touchdown to interception ratio, 5 touchdowns, 0 picks. His big-time throw to turnover-worthy play rate is 2 big-time throws to 3 turnover-worthy plays.
And he's had some bad turnover-worthy plays in there.
So this is one of those, you know, Matt Ryan from a couple of years ago deals where the numbers are just not matching up to what's actually happening right now. And at some point, that's going to swing back.
And against Chicago, pretty good defense.
Right. This that's a happen. Reasonable shot that this comes to fruition this time. So they've been, like, playing teams pretty closely, like good teams, Dallas and Philadelphia. They played them both pretty close. But because the reality hasn't quite matched with what was going on. So now if that actually starts to happen and suddenly Keenan turns the ball over 2 times in a game, which is basically almost what he's averaging right now. If that happens against, you know, they say the Bears are slightly better, neither of those defenses. Therefore, 1.5 turnover worthy plays per game kicks up to 2. And they both actually end up in turnovers. Suddenly, what is a
he's playing, throwing 4 picks?
Right. Well, but the point is that's going from playing a good team tough to being blown out because your quarterback turned the ball over a few times.
Just in case my Thursday night prediction's not good.
Okay.
I think on this podcast, I think you probably nailed what happens with Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. And then I'm going to say Keenum's got like 4 turnovers on Monday Night Football. So if Thursday Night Football didn't work for us, maybe we revert back to this one.
All right.
Yeah, from a prediction standpoint. Mitch Trubisky, by the way, the second highest percentage of uncatchable passes. Again, don't be alarmed. He's literally playing the same way he did last year. He's just not getting the schemed up plays that he had last
year. I think be alarmed because.
Well, don't be surprised.
He's got a problem at quarterback.
But be alarmed.
Honestly,
Trubisky's got to play better. I mean, he has to play better for the Bears. I was explaining to Kelly right before they made the ridiculous comeback. I was like, the Bears are about to be 0-2 by scoring like 8 points in 2 games.
One of two things, if not both of the two things, need to happen for the Bears. One, Trubisky needs to play significantly better. Two, they need to stop trying to idiot-proof the offense for him, right? The only thing that made this team halfway decent last year on offense was the fact that the scheme was so good and it could overcome the fact that Trubisky wasn't actually playing that well in it. You know, it was making him look way better than he was, and in doing so overcame the fact that he wasn't playing that well. So if you start to pare that down and start to try to limit what you're asking him to do to get him to play better, all you're doing is making the overall sum of the parts worse. So at the very minimum, what you need to do is say, look, either you're going to sink or swim within this scheme that we know works. But what we are going to do is run the scheme that we know works because that's the best thing we have going for us. What you can't do is say, well, we can get Mitch playing a little bit better, but we need to make the offense way worse for that to happen. Like that makes no sense.
They need, I mean, last year it was, you know, the jump balls were working, the Tariq Cohen after the catch stuff was working, the schemed up stuff was working. Now you're getting almost nothing from Taylor Gabriel.
The only person playing well in this offense is Allen Robinson.
Yeah, he's the only one with a grade above average.
Yeah. Poor Allen Robinson.
Just to circle back real quick on Case Keenum, somebody was tweeting the other day some of the differences between PFF grade and QBR. I did find another little hole in QBR because they claim that, look, drop, you know, we take into account drops in interception context. But Drew Brees, I know how the QBR system works. You know, it's a lot of air yards and all that stuff and EPA driven. Drew Brees' interception, like he had a bad QBR the other day. All he did on 5 throws was throw 2 first downs with air yards, have one incompletion, and then throw a completion up the seam that became an interception. So in our world, it was a positive grade. He had a bad QBR because they count the interception. It works against him. Case Keenum is one of those guys who's like top 10 right now in QBR and like bottom 5 or bottom 10 in PFF grades because they're not taking into account those turnover-worthy plays. Mm-hmm. So again, my whole thing with a quarterback evaluation system, if I throw a pass directly to you, whether you catch it or not, doesn't change the pass. And if the evaluation system is not treating the same throw with different results as the same, then there's something off. Then you're not really isolating the quarterback's play.
It's very, very hard to do it on certainly in a small sample size way, in any way that doesn't qualitatively look at throws and say that was this was this or that. Like in maybe in macro terms, you can start diving into just some of the advanced numbers and actually end up pulling the meaningful things out of it. But it's because the noise has been like weeded out over, you know, 1,000 snaps.
But it's just like passer rating over a 15-year period is probably going to get you
that's what I'm
the
saying,
best quarterbacks, right?
So you can
QBR
probably
will get you there too.
You can probably look at some of these, you know, adjusted yards numbers and all this kind of stuff if you're talking over a season or over multiple seasons, because those plays have been kind of, the noise has been gotten rid of, right?
Right.
But if you're looking at like a game and being like, well, that guy's whatever adjusted net yards per attempt says this, that I mean that could be anything. It could be.
Yeah, because like for adjusted net yards per attempt, the tipped ball that's an interception counts way worse.
Could be anything at play happening in a single game sample size that won't be accurately reflected in that.
And last year, while Trubisky was ranked like 33rd or something for us, he was fourth in QBR, in part because of his rushing prowess, but also because the jump balls that we were maybe zeroing to Allen Robinson were caught. The 50-yard pass to nowhere that was a Hail Mary that just counted as 50 air yards that was context-free. Like, he earns that, you know? So that's the disconnect with QBR, if you guys are ever comparing that with PFF grade.
All right.
That's it. A tidy hour and 45 minutes. We did it. I love it. We've done 5 hours of podcast. I'm losing track. Four hours of podcasting this
lot,
week.
Lot
it's great.
Hours.
I think we're just bringing the content for our fans. We're really appreciative because a lot of people are listening.
Apparently the live
and
chat.
Watching.
The live chat on YouTube exploded with the Rosen news.
Did it really?
I saw him.
Well, I wasn't keeping tabs
same,
on it.
But I was informed that it exploded.
Yeah.
I hope not literally, because that would make a mess. I don't want to clean that up.
Wouldn't want that. All right, guys. Everybody enjoy week 3. We'll be back on Monday with your full review podcast.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week 1. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.